You don't understand, do you? I need to trust him. He's the one person in all the world I need that most from.
Then why don't you go and tell him that?
There's no way on earth I'm going to tell him, Trudy. I'm having his child.
Do you know how crazy that sounds?
How could he ask me whose baby it is? How could he?
Welcome to Series 3, Episode 30 of Conversations on Eagle Mountain, a podcast about the tribe. I'm your host, Lance, and joining the podcast panel today is Liz.
Hello.
And Sabine.
Hi.
We have episode notes done by Matt and myself. So Series 3, Episode 30, the screenplay was done by Tony Osborne. It was directed by Andrew Merrifield. And the episode synopsis was read out by Lance. The Chosen begin to collapse, but the captive Morats are in more danger than ever as the remaining fanatics try to flush out a hidden Luke. Tysan remains in the lion's den, while Bray is in the doghouse. But can I just start by gushing, because I loved the camera shots in this episode, and I never gush a lot about the behind the scenes stuff, but this was beautiful. In this episode, there was some fantastic shots, so I have to give it to Andrew Merrifield for raising his game, because it was lovely.
It did look really good. I didn't have any problem with like production.
Mm-hmm. Just the other stuff.
Yeah, just the other stuff.
Is that all it's ever going to be about? Just staying alive? You're the one with the dreams, Bray. What do you reckon? I reckon I've forgotten how to trust anyone anymore.
And maybe you're learning. At last, Lex's first rule. Never trust anybody. That's how it's always been, how it always will be.
So yeah, panel, we have seen quite a few discussions between Bray and Lex that kind of show this camaraderie that the two sometimes share. But yeah, what do you make of this moment between the two and the advice that Lex actually gives Bray?
May I just say thank you to the writers for remembering Sandra was pregnant in this moment.
Because I'm
actually very happy that Lex got to say that, you know, and that they got to discuss things like this. Because who would have thought in season one that Bray and Lex would ever have a discussion like this?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
It's nice. It's progress. As for Lex being bummed out by, you know, by Tysan's actions, I don't think I would have found it logical for Lex to respond any other way, because he's currently in a woman can't be trusted sort of state. So of course he's going to suggest something's going on between Amber and Pride. And let's face it, we don't know what's going on between those two.
I like that it gives Lex a little bit of depth. Like, we know that he loves his wife. We know that he's willing to defend his wife to the others and defend what she's doing. But in this private moment, he does allow his personal feelings on the situation. He's still hurt by what she's doing and still feels that she's betrayed his trust by doing what she's doing. It doesn't mean he doesn't love her. It doesn't mean that he doesn't have her back. But he's allowed to still feel like, I'm not happy with what she's doing. And it feels like she's betrayed me by doing it, you know? And you don't get a lot of that kind of duality in many of the characters. They have to feel one way or the other about anything, instead of like, that your feelings can be more complicated than that. And I thought that was just a really nice moment to show that he's not blinded by his wife's actions. He's not in denial about them. He's like, I hate what she's doing. I feel she's betrayed me. I love her. I'm going to have her back and I'm going to believe in her as much as I can, but doesn't change that what she's done to me, that goes deep. I'm not okay with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I like that he does it where someone he feels he can be vulnerable with, which is Bray. And Bray is basically the only one that he's been showing these vulnerabilities to. You know, Lex is careful who he shows that side of himself to. In season one, Zandra was pretty much the only person who ever got to see how vulnerable he felt, how scared he was of their world and his place in it. Season two, he was that way with Alice. So we get to see him have somebody he can, like, trust that they're not going to shame him for how he feels And so I liked that admittance from him.
Mm-hmm.
And in his way, he feels like he's doing Bray a favor by being honest about this. Like, dude, it happened to me. You know what I mean? Like, it's clearly what's happening to you. And he thinks by trying to get Bray to accept that, he's doing him a favor. I don't think it's not his usual just stirring the pot kind of behavior. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's not just saying that to annoy people.
Right. He's not just being a dick. It's just like, like, dude, you know, it's almost like he's telling Bray, you're right to not trust her, you know, validating Bray's feelings. And I like that conversation. It makes me laugh that it took him so long to realize that Bray was talking about Amber. Like, way to keep up with the conversation, Lex. But I like the things that Bray is saying, too, especially when he says, like, when Lex brings up that Tysand broke his trust. And Bray goes, but what if she needs you to trust her? And that's why I always believed back in the earlier times that he was trying to convince Lex to trust his wife because he himself was trying to trust Amber and whatever she might be getting up to. Because mm-hmm. It's like, if I don't trust her, what have I got? You know? And I liked that he just mentioned, like, what if she needs you to trust her despite everything? You know, no matter what it looks like, she needs you to do this. It's nice and quiet. Where Bray is coming from and his feelings, and they're thoughtful. And I just think it's a nice, the narrative is so in Amber's corner this episode in a way it actually annoys me, that I do mm-hmm. like this moment of Bray being able to express his valid reasons for not being sure how he feels. And am I wrong for the doubts I have? And I did appreciate that he's given a moment to be able to express this, and it doesn't feel like the narrative is calling him a bad guy for feeling the way he does. I also like Lex's just his point of view on survival. It's one of the most concise discussions we've ever gotten from the way Lex sees the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when he's talking about, like, you know, my point of view is that we're meant to survive. We can't live if we don't survive. And I teach my kids the same thing so they'd have a chance in this world. Where Bray is asking, like, what kind of life is that? You know, I think that's a very valid thing to be concerned about when you're staring down the barrel of parenthood in this world. And, you know, it's like Bray's point of view is a little bit more philosophical. And what is life? And it's like when he and Amber used to have those great discussions in season one about what is leadership and what does it mean to make the world better? Where Lex, it's very more black and white for him. It's very simple as far as he is concerned. It's about survival. That's what life is. It's about struggling and fighting every day just so that you can be here another day. And so I also like that contrast of their viewpoints on living, especially Lex's last line. Or, like, because Bray's like, what kind of life is that? And, you know, I don't know about your point of view, man, if it's just all about survival. Mm-hmm. And Lex is like, well, at least maybe I'll live long enough to actually be a father.
It's like, mm-hmm.
That's a good point there, you know. I like it because both of their points of view are being given validation. They're not wrong, you know, for how they feel about how to make it in this world. But both of their points of view have upsides and downsides to them.
Luke, they've gone. I think they would have killed you if they'd found you on the spot.
They were his Praetorians, weren't they? Ellie, you can't hide me.
What do you mean?
They're fanatics. They'll have this whole place sealed off and they won't stop until they find me. It's too dangerous. I'm gonna give myself up.
No, we'll think of something somewhere they'll never look. Please, Luke, they'll kill you.
Just tell me. Would you have come with me?
Dear panel, a simple question. Is it right for Ellie to risk all of their lives for Luke?
Okay, if we can just pretend that the fact that these guys are even here makes no sense. If we can just scrub that from the record, let's just start fresh and pretend that there's a valid reason why all of these people are still stuck in this building. I may not agree with Ellie's actions, but I think they're coming from a very valid place. How many times did Luke stick his neck out on the line to protect she and her friends? And from Ellie's point of view, this isn't just that she cares about him. If anything, you could argue this is, I'm doing the same for him that he's been willing to do for us. That's the kind of person I saw. He's somebody worth saving. And also what's being done to him is wrong, you know, and it's not like he's actually committed some sort of crime. So if you see him as an innocent person being pursued and he has saved your life, saved the life of your sister, your friends, from that point of view, it just makes sense to me that, of course, she would want to do the same for him if she can. Of course, it's obviously clouded by the fact that she has real affection for him, but I don't think she's like it's like nonsensical that she's willing to go this far to protect him and not consider how much danger she's putting everybody else in.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's, you know, if you think about it, he may not have been able to save Patsy, but he saved Jack, he saved Ryan, Chloe. You know, he's done, and you know, he spared Ellie's life where others wouldn't have. So yeah, I feel like it makes sense. Even if I disregard her feelings for him, it makes sense that she would want to help him because he has helped them.
Yes, but he's only helped them because he fancies Ellie. I do see what you mean. He's done good things because of his feelings for Ellie.
That's perfectly fair. That's why, yeah. I think Alice's point of view is correct as well. Like, what are you friggin' doing? You know what I mean? Granted, Alice, this is your fault, but... at the end of the day, the only reason your sister has this trauma bond with this guy in the first place is because you threw her at him. So Alice being upset about it also makes sense. You know what I mean? Like, both of, for me, I'm like, I understand where they're both coming from.
Yeah.
And I don't think either of them are wrong for feeling the way they do. I think I do lean more in the camp of Alice, of like, this is, what you're doing is really dangerous. And have you even considered what will happen to the rest of us if you get caught helping this guy? You know, I mean, his life was never in danger when he was helping us, Ellie. You know what I mean? It wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that's happening to Luke, he did put himself there. And so at some point it's like, it's sort of his responsibility where he is. So I get that. I get that point of view as well. Like, is it really our responsibility to get this guy out of trouble? He got himself into trouble and he could have just got the frick out of here when he was dismissed from the Chosen in the first place, and instead decided to stick around.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't to help anyone. He stuck around because he didn't want to leave you. You know what I mean? Like, in a way, I can understand someone saying, mm-hmm. this is Luke's problem. This is not an our problem sort of thing. So I get that too.
Yeah, because, you know, at the end of the day, he was with the Chosen, and therefore he's the enemy.
I just wish they... It is annoying that, you know, Ned said the same thing about Celine. And they flipped out on him, you know, and
yeah,
like, you know, like, guys, make up your mind. If they're chosen, then does that mean that they're people who are worthy of your compassion and care, or are they not? Like, make up your mind. Is the fact that they're chosen the only thing that defines them in your point of view, or do other factors come into play, like their humanity, you know, or their deeds? It feels a little like a lazy excuse that's just thrown out every now and then.
Yeah, but they used a similar excuse for Trudy, and it did help get her out.
What do you mean?
It's like, yeah, she was chosen too, you know? It's...
I guess for me, I'm just tired of hearing the chosen as... they were chosen as an excuse for branding all chosen as non-entities and not people. It's because at this point, you guys have had how many experiences with somebody who has been a chosen, but has also... you've also recognized their humanity, you know, starting with Trudy. Yes, you were mad. She's a chosen. She betrayed you. Yet you still worked to save her for numerous reasons, you know? Yes, Celine, she joined the Chosen, but you recognized her humanity and the fact that she had been your family. So you care about her and don't want anything bad to happen to her. So it's just like I'm saying, like, if we've gotten to this point where you've got people joining the Chosen, you know what I mean? Like, just accept that there's humanity behind it and stop using that. Well, they were chosen as your excuse for, I'm just tired of the excuse. Like, I think you should know by now that that's not... it's not an all-encompassing thing.
Mm.
Oh, they were chosen, therefore they're all bad. Like, you know better by now. That's not the case. So could we stop using that as our blanket excuse for not wanting to deal with somebody? All in all, it's a good discussion, I guess. I guess that's the best way to put it. These are two really valid points of view, and it makes sense that they both feel the way they feel. And I like it because it can be hard to know whose side you fall on. You know, you got people who are going to feel like Alice, just like, nah, this is messed up what you're doing, putting everyone in danger to help this guy who got himself into this situation, who he had a choice. And many of us didn't. And then I could understand someone being like, Alice, this is your fault for one. You pushed Ellie into the situation. And why shouldn't she help this guy when he's helped you so many times? On and on. You know, I like that.
Yeah, no, true.
And Luke has shown his human side more than once.
Yeah, he's been very consistent with it.
But it doesn't change anything. Either he does or he doesn't.
So what do I do?
I don't know. It's up to you. Maybe he'll tell you himself. Or maybe you should ask him. But either way, isn't it better to know the truth?
Yeah, what did you make of May's feelings for Pride and, like, this interaction between herself and Amber? I have thoughts, but you go ahead first.
I get why May is falling for Pride. Totally get that. Because here's a guy who's treated her with respect, who has been kind to her, and who's, well, let's face it, he's hot. So, yeah, I totally get May falling for him. Because, you know, normally she's used to guys who treat her more like, well, season one Lex. And then Amber. I just cannot get over the fact that it's too typical for Amber to tell May to go after him, because I have a gut feeling that after watching Ebony flirt with Pride, Amber is only too happy to send someone else after Pride. Anyone but Ebony. It's like, of course he would.
Yeah, it makes sense that she's more receptive to hearing out May talking about how she feels about Pride and isn't bothered by it, because of course seeing Pride with Ebony would trigger Amber on so many levels. You know, even if she, it's not even about jealousy, like, oh, I want him, he's mine. It's just like, of all the people, heck no, not her. I don't think so. Anybody but her.
She can't have him.
Mm-mm. Right. Ebony is just a massive trigger for her. And so I definitely got that whiff. Like, of course she's going to already be in May's camp. She don't know anything about May. She don't know what kind of person she is. She does know that May nearly got everyone killed and is the reason Dal's dead. She doesn't seem to have remembered that part at all, you know? And
nope.
She's just like, hey, she's working for us now, so.
She got Brady out. She got Trudy reunited with her kid.
All right, that seems to be enough for her to have completely forgotten about. It seems more surely she wrote off Dal's death as a tragic, unfortunate thing that happened. But yeah, she's over it. And yeah, I'm sure a lot of that has to do with the fact that it's Ebony of all the people.
Mm-hmm. You know what? That's so true. There should have been real tension between herself and May. Really should have been. You get nothing.
That whole Dal being her dear friend that she had to get over, we don't even know how that worked out for her. She's back.
Well, she got pregnant. Fine.
It's just there is a good send-off for Ashwith, but it doesn't mean anything in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah.
She's over it. She's fine.
Mm-hmm.
I like the light in the scene. I think the lighting's really beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Like, May looks absolutely breathtaking the way the light is falling on her. She's being all vulnerable and expressing how she feels. Like, you know, I've liked guys before, but it was just for fun. This is big. I really like this guy. I can't keep my cool, you know, and something kind of sweet about that. And I like the way it's filmed and stuff. But yeah, it is a weird situation when you think about the history May and Amber have had, and it's like none of that ever happened. And
did she ever connect those dots?
What do you mean? Like, did she know that it was May?
Does he remember it was May?
Yeah, like, it's just...
I think the writers even forgot.
I think the writers forgot.
For real, they just forgot, yeah.
They only remember every now and then. Lex will bring it up as a problem, but nobody else remembers. Mm-hmm. I mean, Bray's like, look, it doesn't matter anymore, okay? Everyone's had to do what they've had to do to survive. But it is strange that Amber doesn't remember that this is the girl who set them up, and she's the reason that Dal's dead. Like,
yep. Then again, Dell's dad is also the reason that she's pregnant right now.
Kind of get why May would never bring it up, because May is always dismissive in what she did. And when the one time Lex did bring it up to her, she was just like, look, she wasn't even sorry. She was just like, I did what I had to do to survive, blah, blah, blah. So I get why she wouldn't bring this up to Amber, why it would never cross her mind. But yeah, I would have liked to see a little bit of distance from Amber. And but even have maybe Amber address that she's had to let that go and accept, you know, just something to acknowledge that she remembers her best friend, her childhood friend, died because of his actions. But instead, she's just like, they're having cocoa at a girl's sleepover talking about pride. It's like, okay, I guess you just have bigger things to worry about, Amber. Fair enough. Who cares what May did? Like, fair, okay, you know, but...
She's no Ebony.
I have to say, this scene did make me laugh, because I'm like, May, you spent a couple of minutes with him. You've had a couple of projects together, and now you're declaring your love to him, to Amber. Like, calm down.
And she's a teenager.
I know, teenager, but like...
If you've never felt this strongly before, it must be love. What else could it be?
Maybe something you ate? I don't know.
Claimed to love quite a few boys in middle school. I was pretty sure. Oh, I love Larry. I love him.
She probably recognized it's not the same as when she was, you know, playing with Lex.
Just for fun. Funsies.
And I can't help but feel like, Amber, you're just pushing May on because you don't want pride to feel anything for you. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, you're just trying to push that to the side, as far to the side as possible.
He's not to feel anything for her and not for Ebony either.
It definitely, you see, it becomes more obvious that she just wants pride to fall for anyone.
Yeah,
other literally. Than her. Definitely. Because it's clear he still has strong feelings for her, and she would recognize it better than most, since you had to fob him off the whole time they were with the Guyans together, and he was rebound. Yeah. So she would definitely recognize that he's not over it. I'd feel better. I'd feel better about this whole thing if he found somebody. You know, I would feel. Mm-hmm. I'd feel better about leading him on. Definitely. if he fell in love with somebody, you get that. You definitely get that feeling.
I felt that.
Because let's face it, you let him on, Amber, big time. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And everybody's let you off the hook, because that's the narrative. Amber is not at fault for anything she did to anybody. She's the victim here.
Like, go for it, May, go for it. Tell him.
Mm-hmm. Could use a great love.
And if Bray sees you two together, then he'll instantly stop being suspicious of me and Pride.
Get me out of this hole I dug for myself.
Oh boy, okay. While in the sea, trying to capture some of the Chosen and show them all the error of their ways, Bray takes the opportunity to confront Pride about Amber's pregnancy.
Okay, just tell me straight up, you sleeping with her?
Give me a break.
Is Amber carrying your baby or mine?
How could you even think that?
I've seen how you two are, so don't...
Bray, you're an idiot. Amber and I are just good friends, and you're gonna have to accept that. Of course the baby's yours. How could you even think she'd betray you?
So yeah, let's focus on that bit first of all. How did you feel about Bray confronting Pride?
Oh boy.
Hey, kudos to Bray for taking something on, like, head on. Bray, who usually likes to beat around the bush and doesn't want to confront things. The fact that he was just like, look, let's just have it out. Is it your baby? You know what I mean? Like, I just need to know. I can't go forward. I can't make a decision about this relationship unless I know the truth. Amber's not going to tell me. Is it your baby? I'm going to give him kudos. Going straight, like, let's just do this man to man. Is it your baby? You know, is he a little antagonistic? Sure. But I don't blame him for at least going straight up to Pride and asking him the big question. Are you two sleeping together? You know, it's not like he's like, hey, did you betray me? Did you sleep with my girlfriend? He's just like, is it your baby? Which again implies that at any time she could have gotten pregnant with Pride's child, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll give him kudos for that. Like, what else is he supposed to do if Amber won't give him an answer? He needs one, right? Needs to know.
No, that's very true.
I prefer him ask him to him continuously making assumptions.
As for Pride's response, I'm like two minds about it. Like, on one hand, it definitely feels like a Pride response. The response of, like, that's crazy. Why would you even ask me something like that? Of course not. But at the same time, I don't like his response because it feels like the writers forget. Pride is the one who straight up told how serious he and Amber's relationship was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like they have forgotten that that's how Pride was introduced to Bray and the audience, as having a serious relationship with Amber. The way Pride talked about her, he worshipped the ground that woman walked on. And now he's talking to Bray like the very idea of he and Amber is the most ridiculous thing he's ever heard.
Right,
how could Bray ever jump to such a conclusion? And it's like, Pride, you two were together the entire time Bray thought she was dead. It is not ridiculous for him to wonder if you two produced a child. Like, it's not that weird. So I really don't like Pride talking to Bray like he's an idiot, the most foolish, awful person for even considering this. And that feels like the narrative, once again, trying to brand Amber as some innocent in this whole thing, rather than acknowledge what she did and that Bray's feelings and suspicions are completely valid. They keep treating the narrative treats Bray like he is a terrible boyfriend for ever thinking that Amber could betray him when she already has.
She like, let the poor man believe she was dead, crying out loud.
Crying out loud, she let him think she was dead because she didn't want to break up with him. If that's not betrayal, I don't know what is. And I don't like this narrative painting her as she did nothing wrong. Bray is just a silly, insecure boy for feeling the way he does. And it's like, no, he's not. He's not. Okay? I don't know how you get over someone doing that to you and acting like it was nothing. And again, never apologizes for it. Ever. Never says, gee, that was a real crap thing to do to you. Sorry. I was wrong on me. No. It's Bray, you're crazy. I can't believe you could think those things about me. Like, I think a lot of things about you after finding out that you let everyone you know think you were dead.
We get one tiny apology later on in this episode, and that's it. But yeah, she doesn't, generally.
That doesn't really count.
But no, I agree with all of that. I agree with all of that. Bray, like, absolutely was spot on to do this, and obviously Pride's reaction does rub me up the wrong way as well, because like you mentioned, like, he did like present his relationship with Amber in a certain way to Bray, so he is absolutely right to question, like, is it yours, is it not mine? You know what I mean? I absolutely agree with Bray and his reaction.
You were engaged, Pride. You told me to a promise to each other. Is it so weird that I think that you were knocking boots?
Yeah. You're laughing as if it's ridiculous. Well, it's not. It's actually justified. It's a justifiable question.
I don't like how Bray is treated by the narrative, because it's all so that Amber looks so innocent, and it drives me crazy. Would you let her take responsibility? They did the same thing to Bray in season 2. Like, we don't want him to take responsibility for any of his blunders or his choices or his mistakes. So it's everybody's fault but Bray. And here it is. It's everybody's at fault but Amber. And it's like, just acknowledge what she did. Own it. Own that it was wrong, so we can all move on and stop, you know, gaslighting Bray here. Like, stop. You're gaslighting the audience while you're at it.
Yeah.
It's like they want to make us think that Pride only said that to, you know, make sure nobody would touch his girlfriend.
You know what? I would have accepted if that's something that Pride actually admitted to.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if Pride actually acknowledged that there's a good reason for why Bray feels the way he does, and then confessed, like, talked to him and said, look, I know there were things that I said about Amber and I and blah, blah, blah. That would be compelling. That would be really wild for him to admit something like that and say what he had done. But no.
Yeah.
We're just going to ignore how we all met him and what he said about that relationship. We're the crazy ones. In fact, it's because of all this stuff that I forgot that Pride had ever said what he said about how serious they were, you know? Because of the way the rest of the season treats what he and Amber had, I completely forgot
that
the way they were introduced was as having a very serious relationship. So I remember the first time we had to discuss it, and I was reading the notes, and I was like, Pride and Amber weren't engaged. There was nothing going on. And then I was like, oh my gosh, I was gaslit into forgetting, you know, what that, how serious he described the relationship as being. And she only backed him up when she talked about it too.
It's literally the writers have backpedaled ever since that flashback. They just backpedaled continuously to try and downplay it ever since they introduced it.
Because it made Amber look bad.
Yes.
And we can't have that.
No, can't have that.
I want to backtrack to the beginning of this scene. Like, what did you make of this idea of trying to capture some of the Chosen one by one and then letting them go with a slap on the wrist?
It is something they discussed before, having Trudy reprogram them, and they do have Trudy with them.
Yeah, but it's the way they're doing it that makes no logical sense.
That's it,
whatsoever.
Yeah.
It's not the idea that you can capture these people and try to talk them down off their ledge. But, I mean, hello, you're going to do it in the span of an hour on the street? Are you serious? Like, come on. Like, it's the execution of the idea is like, you might as well have done nothing. Like, really.
They probably spoke to them, realized they had already deserted, and
you're better off hiring that puppet show and then having them spout your propaganda about the Chosen. Than you are
right
snatching up kids who've already deserted the Chosen in the first place, only to be like, here's a former Supreme Mother to tell you that you did the right thing, and here's why. Like, they don't care. They don't care. They left the Chosen for a reason, of their own volition, okay?
it's here, have a cookie, well done for deserting.
It's a little late to, these aren't the ones you need to be capturing. They already left the Chosen. They're the wrong ones to be doing this with.
It's just making sure that they are deserting.
The idea isn't bad, but...
Yeah, the idea is fine. It's just...
The way they're doing it is just silly. Just silly.
Can you imagine if it was that easy to convert them?
Right. Like, these are supposed to be fanatics. You just, for an hour, you snatch them up and like let them go. It's like, hey, it's all done. Back to normal.
I also don't understand the point of snatching at people who've already left. Those are the wrong people you need to convince. They already decided on their own. They didn't really want to be part of this Chosen thing.
The only thing you could use these people for is to find out what on earth is going on in that mall and how crazy Joff has become.
Right, yeah. Some actual information. So
if they would have tried to get some intel from them, sure.
Just to give them something to do. I guess. Still killing time, I guess. Like, why? Why are we still doing this?
Because we need to give Alice a chance after all those weeks to finally plan an escape.
My God.
I got nothing on that.
No. No.
It blows my mind. We're still killing time. We're still killing time, you know? Like, why?
Because Amber has to be more visually pregnant over the couple... Over the next episode.
No, I can't. I can't do this.
I don't get why they're just wasting time. The Chosen are abandoning and collapsing. You're just still doing busy work, really. No, I don't understand it.
They don't really want to save the other mole rats. They don't really want to save the rest of them.
Well, they've never bothered to try and get in there again, so... Something to be said about that. That they don't really.
That's so true.
They have never bothered to try to get back into that mall to rescue anybody. Like, you guys tried once,
and then
you had Lex who was sneaking in there just to get the booty, and it never occurred to you guys that you could use that and try to get these mall rats out. You never bothered to try again.
Can you imagine? They could have gotten the girls out.
I get that they're not supposed to rescue them. I get it. You know, it's just like, we understand the mall rats are not supposed to get out. Fine. But you gotta do it better, okay?
Yeah.
It can't be that they just, nobody tries to get out and nobody tries to rescue them, you know? Nope, they were just like, sorry, they're never supposed to go anywhere, so nobody's gonna try to escape, and no one's gonna try to rescue them.
Yeah, all they do was just show them trying, just little attempts.
It's the same strategy they did with Brady.
I was going to say, it's exactly how they handled Brady. They're not supposed to find her, so we won't even try to find her.
Because if we look for her, then we have to explain why we can't find her.
That's too much work.
I was about to say, you can't be bothered to do the work for that.
Nope. Too much work for that. This kind of writing, though, it really does, whereas, for example, season 2 was very streamlined. Even if you didn't like what was always happening, you can't deny they knew what they were trying to do the whole way through. They definitely had an outline for that whole season. Even to the point where they would skip over the characters having reactions to things because we had to move on to the next plot point. But it was streamlined all the way from from the premiere to the wrap up. Season 3 is just not like that. They only have vague ideas of what they want to happen and how they want to get there, you know? And that's why we get a lot of this wibbly wobbly time travel stuff, you know what I mean? It's just like the details don't matter. They don't know how they were going to get there. They were just like, you know, oh, well, why don't we do this? This is available to us. Let's do this episode. And then wound up backtracking the next episode because this was just not streamlined or well thought out at all.
If he's not better by the time you all go, then I'm staying.
You're starting to sound as crazy as he is. You took this job on to trick the Chosen, remember? It's not for keeps. This whole place is gonna go down. And if you're by his side when it does, who knows what the rebels will do to you.
So yeah, panel, what did you make of Casey's summary of the situation and Tyrsan's resolve to kind of stick with the Guardian, even at the risk of spurning a true reunion with her husband once this is all over?
I think it comes back to that great point that you had made, how I don't think they've done a very good job of showing how Tyrsan became this attached to Jaffa so quickly, that she is like, this is even a conversation that needs to be had. But at the same time, we're trying to be like, well, maybe this is Tyrsan because she tends to latch on to people in weird ways, with very little provocation, and is willing to put herself on the line to protect those people and look out for them, I guess. But it does feel lackluster. It feels a little half-assed, to be honest. Because at least when she was, for example, trying to help Ebony, she wasn't putting anyone else in danger to do so. The only person she was putting in danger was herself. You know what I mean? She wasn't risking anybody else to find Ebony or help Ebony. But this is like, do you not recognize the danger? Like, you're supposed to be trying to protect your friends, and I don't know how you think what you're doing is protecting them at this point. I don't know why you feel so responsible for this guy. You know what I mean? I'm trying to understand it, but I personally think it could have been done much better. Like, I'm not going to say they did a good job with it. I do like what Casey says to her, like the reminder, like, did you forget that this was what kind of gig this was, the whole point? Did you forget the reason you decided to do this? And pointing out, like, if you're by his side, this is all going to come crashing down very quickly. It's coming to the stretch, Tyrsan. And what do you think is going to happen if you're by this guy's side when it does? I liked that. That's very Casey, you know, for all his scamming, he does look out for his friends and his family, and that he'd be concerned. Like, what are you doing, Tyrsan? You know, I appreciated somebody saying it to her. Like, I think you might be taking your pretend job a little far.
And coming from him, that's something.
And putting yourself and everyone else in danger for it. And I don't understand why, you know. But yeah, it feels a little soon for her to be like, it'd be a conflict of whether she'd leave with her friends. Like, really?
Right. Like,
last time you had this conversation with your husband, you didn't want to leave because your friends would be in danger if you did. But if everyone was able to get away, they haven't given you a good reason for why you wouldn't go with them. I didn't like the whole, he's sick and I'm a healer. Since when? Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Come on. Yeah.
I've seen lots of times where you didn't care about healing someone, Tyrsan, or didn't even cross your mind that you could heal somebody, or, you know, you certainly aren't trying to heal Celine. Celine is somebody who needs your healing, Tyrsan.
Yep.
And you threw her under the bus and didn't care what that would do to her mental state. You don't get to pull this. I'm a healer, okay?
Nope.
So the idea behind it doesn't bother me. It's, again, it's just a lazy execution of getting these characters to the places that they are, where they're, like, just stuck in to do something that the plot wants them to, but I don't think they did a good job getting the character there.
Yeah.
But if you jingle the keys loud enough... Maybe people won't notice this stuff.
I was just thinking, I think they kind of missed a trick as well. Like, even just a small scene like between Tyrsan and Celine, just to kind of show like the juxtaposition, like how Celine has completely fallen for the Chosen and into their doctrine, but like how Tyrsan is holding on because she cares about the person rather than the organization, if you see what I mean. And I think that would have just helped this a bit.
It would have.
Because they haven't put much of the work in, but it would have helped a little bit just to go, okay,
are a lot of small moments that they could have given characters where we'd at least be like, okay, I buy that. I get it. I get where you're going with this or what this character's motivations, or they just didn't want to do it because they didn't really think the season through, in my opinion. They're flying by the seat of their pants.
No, it definitely feels like that, yeah.
I wish we would have gotten some kind of backstory as to why Tyson feels this strongly about it, you know?
Because she didn't get one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, we still don't know nothing about her past.
Because if I think about, for example, Amber's past, who mentioned she had a sister that joined a cult. You know, with that sort of background, wanting to take care of someone who's lost their mind while leading a cult would even make more sense than to want to help for someone like Tyson if she had such an experience that was told to us. But, you know, it's...
And see how easy that was? They gave her one sentence of a sister. We're like, what? Exactly. You had a sister that you never mentioned? But boom, she had motivation for being in Trudy's corner and being able to deprogram her. We didn't see it, but we at least understood how this probably happened. Amber would have been committed to doing it, and she had a reason for why. That's all they got to do.
Exactly.
It's so simple, yeah.
So simple. And yet, Tyson, we still don't know what she materialized out of, why she does half of the things that she does. And that's coming from someone who really likes her.
Mm-hmm.
These last few months, it's been the thought of seeing you, of touching you again, that's kept me alive. Amber, you are my purpose, and I love you. And I'm so sorry.
If I hadn't doubted you all that time ago, we'd never have been apart. And we're never going to be again, are we, Bray? Because I need you now more than ever.
So yeah, how did you feel about this scene?
He really apologized, though.
No,
it was a semi-apology.
It was an acknowledgement, but it wasn't like I'm sorry for putting you through that. It was kind of like acknowledging that once Dal died and realizing that that's how she made him feel. With pretending to be dead, but it wasn't like, I'm sorry for doing that to everybody. It's just, I acknowledge that must have sucked. That's it. Like, and did you have anything you wanted to add to that?
It's a half apology. That's the best you're going to get from Amber.
Obviously.
Like, when you smack someone in the face, right? You got to do more than be like, oh, wow, I hit you. Like, yes, and are you sorry that you just hit me? Thank you for validating the experience we both had. Do you have anything to add to that? So yeah, I'm just like, you're almost there. Yeah, it's great that, you know, you acknowledge that, gee, if you had trusted him, you guys would have never been in this situation. You're almost there, Amber. You're almost there.
And they wouldn't have been. It's because Chloe once said Amber would have seen right through Trudy.
But again, if they have her say the words, I'm sorry, that means making her take some blame.
Take some blame, yeah. That would have focused that.
And the entire whole situation, it's the only reason that Ebony was even dragged into it, was so that Amber wouldn't have to take any blame.
Mm-hmm.
It was the whole point of making, you know, Ebony what she was and having her do a bunch of things that didn't make sense for her to do. And that's the whole reason. It was also Amber would never have to be responsible for what she did.
Mm.
And again, it could have been I'm not even saying Amber would be a terrible person for not wanting to go back to the city. You know, it would have just flushed her out as a human being. Mm. It was too much. And she did this terrible thing and she's sorry for it. But when you don't even acknowledge that what she did was terrible and that she should be sorry for it, come on.
Yeah, but this is Amber we're talking about. She can't be anything but perfect.
Ugh, yeah, I guess.
I mean, as you mentioned earlier, it's not just Amber. It's like Bray, any of the leaders. They don't want them to be valuable, too valuable, and take on too much blame. And they do it in the worst possible way some of the times. But I get it, yeah. It's annoying.
It's really frustrating because in season one, they weren't afraid for Amber to be in the wrong, for her to make the wrong judgment call, for her to have taken her need to help people too far or be too controlling. They weren't afraid to do that. Why? Because Amber was a person. She was a human being. She wasn't the legend of Amber. She was just a person who's doing her best and isn't always going to get it right. you know, and that's what I loved about her. She took it way too far several times in season one. And that might explain why they considered doing that Danny storyline with her before they lost her and had to create a new person.
Yeah.
What if Amber took her control issues too far? But this is not a person. This is someone who's never wrong. Everybody else is at fault for things that they've done. Not her, though. Not her. But, I mean, whatever. I'm glad that they've reconciled, kinda. Once again, we haven't dealt with the real issues, but I like that, you know, I like some of the things they're talking about, like the fear of what this means, bringing a child into this world. That is genuinely a terrifying thing. You know, it's one thing when you have to witness somebody else go through it.
Mm-hmm.
It's another when it's you, when you realize, holy crap, you know, this is what I got to do. This world's crazy. And I'm bringing a baby into this. What kind of life is that child going to have? And it's not as easy to give simple platitudes like you were able to do to Trudy. You know, because it's happening to you. And I like that they're having those kind of conversations.
You made me quite sad now, because I was thinking, we don't really get Amber, the person, really, again, until the show ends. I mean, we get like a little blip in season four when she like reminisces about what she's undergone, but we don't really see Amber, the person.
Mm-hmm.
It's just always Amber, the leader, and Amber, the, you know what I mean, the symbol. it's quite sad, actually.
That's why I've always had mixed feelings about her return, you know, because I'm like, mm-hmm. It's not the person I loved. It's not the character I loved. You know, it's this perfect entity.
They didn't have to do that. That's what's even worse about it. Like, they didn't to do that.
I think that's a big part of why I don't really like Amber. It's because I mainly remember the way she was from here on and the way they treated her as if being perfect.
Well, she's the goddess. She's the answer to everything. She's the only one who can fix anything. She's the only one who can solve anything. She's the only one, you know? And
no blame.
That's not who she was. But, you know, again, I like that she and Brave made up, I guess, you know? And because, you know, I do like them together. And I like that they're a united front on whatever's going to come. We're gonna create a world for our child. Now, I guess, like, good for you two.
I was just thinking, how does this last?
Well, come on, God. We can't let them have an actual relationship where they work things out together.
Writers, come on, just a brief moment, please.
Have you guys ever noticed sometimes with certain romance stories that there are writers who seem to believe that they don't know how to create drama or tension in the relationship without one, making the characters terrible to each other or toxic to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Like they don't know, they only know how to create tension in the relationship by, well, making the characters terrible people, right? And one of the things I always liked about Tyson and Lex was that they made drama without Lex and Tyson being terrible to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of wonder if they don't know how to make Bray and Amber compelling without the drama of constantly tearing them apart.
Yeah.
Like, they don't know how to make them an interesting character, like couple, unless they're being physically torn from each other. Because they only get to be pining for each other. And they only get to be longing for each other. But they never get to just be together and be a couple who happens to be in love and working things through. It's always like, I mean, they get like a few days and they get this compelling drama of, is Amber going to stay or go back to the tribe that she took full responsibility for? And instead of answering that question, they were like, let's separate them. This is too much. It's too hard. You know, we don't want that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just separate them. And that's it. Like, are you guys afraid that your dream couple isn't that great if you have to write them together?
Yeah, they probably wouldn't have worked in the long run.
I mean, as soon as they got together in season one, Bray gets kidnapped by Ebony.
I was going to say, they've done this since the beginning. Like, they've just not... It's like they've not wanted to write them together. It's weird.
Some writers don't know how to do it.
I don't know if it's because they don't know how. Yeah. They just don't know how.
Oh, no.
To make them work? It's possible. I've seen great two leadership couples, but it's like they just didn't know how to do Amber and Murray. It's weird.
It's some couples, I think, it's like a TV show, a long-running TV show, and they'll have two compelling people, and the drama is will they or won't they?
Mm-hmm.
And you'll spend season after season after season, will they or won't they? Will they or won't they? They're almost there, and then something happens, and it doesn't happen. And maybe finally they get together. Now, some TV shows know how to make you still love the characters once mm-hmm. they're together. And then others, mm-hmm. you find, oh, I thought they were way more interesting when it was still a will they, won't they? You know, because they realize they just, that's what made them interesting, was would they get together or not? And I wonder if they ran into that problem for themselves with Amber and Bray. Like, their personal attachment to Bray and Amber getting together, they realized it was based on whether or not they would, and then they got together. God.
You just reminded me of Ruby and Slade. Will they, won't they? That will was they, so beautiful. They? And then yep. when it happened, that was it. They're like, yep. no, you ruined Ruby.
Exactly. You're like, oh. You're right. Now we don't know what to do with them.
Oh, yeah. They don't know how to, yeah.
We didn't actually think about how they'd work together and what would make that cool. And we were just in love with the push and pull, mm-hmm. the tug of war. And now we got there. And now we don't know what to do.
This is what the fans asked for.
Same with Ebony and Slade. Yeah, like literally, like one after the other. Like, actually, they love the push and pull, but then they don't know how to make them work actually together.
They're like, what kind of drama can we drag in here? Let's have some absurd thing happen that will threaten to tear the relationship asunder again. You know, I mean, maybe that was the problem with Celine and Ryan. These two were never allowed to just be happy as a couple. They got like a day or two in their whole relationship just to be happy. And otherwise the writers are just throwing crap at them.
And if you don't know how to fix their issues or make them bigger, add in a baby.
Yeah.
Or a suspected baby.
An unexpected pregnancy. Add in another person. Another love interest. Yeah, I don't know what happened.
Sorry, I'm now just thinking of Slade and Ruby and how to keep those interesting, so add in a pregnancy scare.
Yeah.
Now they have to stick together. now they're locked together in hatred.
We'll make them. If they don't want to, we'll make them.
Alright, and that leads us to our final thoughts of the episode.
I'm waiting for Zoot to speak to me, but he doesn't come. Why won't he come? Why won't he speak?
So as the Guardian continues to descend further and further into madness, Tysan remains faithfully at his side, even falling asleep beside him. But in a dramatic cliffhanger ending, the door opens to reveal Zoot standing there before the Guardian. I mean, yes, we all know it wasn't real, but was there any hint, thinking back, did you ever believe that this was actually Zoot?
I only hoped so, but I never truly believed.
Mm.
I was quite sure this wasn't what they meant when they said Zoot lives.
Yeah, Zoot lives.
Yeah, I definitely just assumed this was their way of visualizing his madness. Like, I mean, granted, I wouldn't judge someone for thinking maybe Zoot's alive. I mean, Amber turned out to be alive, so why not, mm-hmm. right? So I wouldn't fault anyone for thinking, oh my gosh, is it possible that Zoot's not mm-hmm. dead? I personally didn't think it was Zoot. I just thought, oh, this is your way of showing that his descent into madness is he's finally manifested what he's been dying to see. You know, Zoot. He's wanted mm-hmm. Zoot to show himself to him. He's complained about it. He has shown resentment and jealousy towards others that Zoot presents himself to. So I was like, okay, I figured that's what they were going for. At the time, this by itself doesn't bother me, but it bothers me when you take in the entire storyline of the Guardian going into madness. In retrospect, it bothers me. I was actually talking to Tamsin. Shout out to Tamsin and her podcast, Pop Goes the Tam Tam.
Mm-hmm.
Check it out, people. We were talking about this storyline, and I was trying to put into words why it makes me angry. The Guardian's badness, the Mallrats having to decide whether he should be put on trial for his crimes, blah, blah, blah. And she helped formulate what bothered me the most about it. It's not that he's supposed to be going mad. It's not that the Mallrats are faced with a very important question about whether they have the right to execute this person or put them on trial or whether he knew right from wrong. What bothers me is the rug pull that the writers play on us, the viewer. They take you down this road of, this guy has clearly lost his mind. So the question of whether or not he's always been crazy is a valid one for the people to ask.
Mm-hmm.
But then when they pull their, then they decide to pull a fast one and show that he's been lucid this whole time and he's just been playing everybody.
I hate that. Sorry. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That ruins scenes like this in retrospect. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, what the frick was this? If he's playing everybody, pretending to go crazy for whatever frickin' reason. I understand if you pretend to go crazy when you're in when you're captured, you know, but I don't understand why you'd be pretending to be crazy now. Or are you trying to say he went crazy, but then he found his mind again just in time to fake it? And so in retrospect, I cannot appreciate this. It bothers me too much because it's so messy, all because they wanted to get the writers wanted that gotcha moment later on with, oh, he's not crazy. He's known he's been doing this whole time, you know? And it's just like, then why did you waste my time with the storyline?
I agree 110%. What happens later on really annoys me, actually. Oh, yeah.
Because by itself, this is actually an interesting storyline, playing with the mental health of somebody who convinced himself, fell in love with his own legend so much that he lost his mind. Like, that's compelling. But they didn't want to commit to it. They're just playing with us. And that ruins the whole thing for me. So I don't even know how I feel about this. I'm just like, ugh, this doesn't mean anything. He's not really crazy. So what is this about?
Mm-hmm.
Were they committed to him being crazy before they changed their minds? Like, you know what I mean? Like, because they seem to be really selling he's lost his mind. That he's not thinking clearly.
Yeah.
You know, the things he's saying. Tyson is genuinely worried for him and scared for him. And like, holy crap, what is this guy going to do? I can't take my eyes off of him because I'm literally scared what he'll do.
Mm-hmm.
And then, oh, it turns out he's not crazy. So were they committed to him being crazy and then changed their mind somewhere along the line? And because they thought, oh, won't that be wild? Yeah. I don't know.
You know, it could have been so interesting if they had shown us that he was acting like he's crazy. You know, if they would have given us that little glimpse of, okay, he's just doing this to get out of it.
Yeah, if there had been some hints, you know, but they went full-blown, he's crazy. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they really leaned into, it's not a question, this guy has lost his mind. And the way it's written and the way even the actor is committed to the role, even he believed this character has lost his mind, so I'm going to play it that way. And Damon does a great job of showing somebody whose lucidity is faltering, you know, and I'm convinced the guy's losing his mind, so why would you waste that later?
Yeah.
Like, what was the point of any of it? So, yeah, this is kind of a cool scene, but in the grand scheme of things, it's a waste and doesn't mean anything, because whether or not he sees Zoot, it doesn't matter in the long run.
I wonder how many people there were that actually assumed Zoot was coming back.
Mm. Yeah, was this just to play with the audience and make them think, oh, they might get that bad guy back, you know?
They were 5 to Amber, so why not?
Yeah, I mean, because literally we've seen him just like speaking to air and praying and everything like that. This was the moment we actually get to see Zoot. So like, people could have thought back then, like, oh, no, Zoot's back. He's actually back. Yeah. That's another what if.
and that would have made certain comments Trudy makes so much more scary, so much more interesting.
Like, even though they didn't do a great job of showing Celine's slide into believing the Chosen, you know, at least they're committed to it. They don't backpedal on the fact that this poor girl fell for the Chosen line and struggles when the Chosen are over. She doesn't know what to do. I do love that scene with her and Luke when she's like, maybe Zoot will fix this. Maybe he'll fix the Guardian. Don't tell me that everything I gave up was for nothing, Luke. You were one of the people who convinced me to keep down this path. Don't tell me I threw away everything for nothing because I chose to believe you, Luke. And Luke's face, because what can he say to this girl who, yes, he encouraged to go down this path and to accept everything she'd lost, and it was for the good of everything. And now you got nothing to tell her when you're telling her, you know, the Guardian is crazy, and there's nothing for it, and Zoot can't fix it because I don't even know if Zoot's real. You know what I mean? Like, that was a good moment. And like, he's got nothing he can say to her because he's partly to blame for where she is. Because he never dissuaded her from following this path. He was more concerned with making sure she didn't lose her belief. And now she's left hanging because you're not with them anymore. And you can't tell her anything good about the Guardian. And they at least committed to Celine being messed up and having to find her way back from believing all this garbage. And being alone, because nobody else did. Like, none of her friends or anything believed in. So she has to find her way back alone. Because nobody's going to help her, because they're all sick of her crap. So she's completely alone, trying to parse out everything, you know?
I'm glad we do get that.
Me too. I don't feel sorry for it, but I'm glad we get it.
We see the consequences of her actions.
I'm just glad they committed to it, you know?
Yeah.
They don't pull a fast one where she's like, no, I realized it was all bull crap. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was just playing.
Oh, yeah. I'm so glad they didn't do that. Yeah, that would have really annoyed me. Mm. Okay, cool. That brings Series 3, Episode 30 to a close. Thank you very much to our panel. If you like to take part in a future episode of the podcast, please just send us a message on our Facebook page, on our website, or Instagram, thetribe.co.uk. So we'll see you next time for Episode 31. Until then, bye.
Bye.
Bye.